All right. Well, hello everyone. I hope you all had a good weekend. Ready to well, okay, you've already had a class just now, but to continue, ready to continue with our studying the Ising model. So I'm going to pick up where we left off last time, which was looking at the two-site Ising model. So let me pull up my notes in just a second. Okay, so I'm going to start with a reminder of where we were at the end of the last class on Thursday. So we were looking at this two-site Ising model. And so we had simplified our model, so it looks like this in the most precise form. And what we had done at the end is we found a matrix for this term, which looks like 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1 on the diagonal. And we found a matrix for this term, which looks like 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0. And then I had us look at two different sort of limits of this system. So we had the limit where h is equal to 0. So in that case, the Hamiltonian is just this cz term. And we found the eigenstates, are up, up, and down, down, with energy minus 2j. Sorry, that's not correct, minus j. Minus j. And up, down, and down, up, with energy plus j. And then we also have the limit j equals 0. So we have just the sigma 0 x plus sigma 1 x. And here, the eigenstates were both spins pointing right, or in the plus x direction, with minus 2h. These two states with zero energy. And with both spins pointing in the minus x direction with energy 2h. So this is what we got to. And now our goal for today, the goal for the first half of the class, I should say, is to first find the eigenstates and energies for any j and h, and then to find some properties of the ground state. Okay, there's something in the chat. What is this? Would it be possible for me to post the notability notes as a PDF in the Google Drive? I think I can do that. I will try to do that at some point in the future, but I have never done that before, so I'll probably do that after the end of the whole course. Okay, so to do these two things, we are going to be doing some programming in Python using the notebook that I had posted before Thursday's class called Two-Site Ising Model. I'll move over to that Python in just a minute. But first, I want to say a little bit about a bit more about this second point of find some properties of the ground state. So, what are we actually going to be finding? So, what does this mean? There are things we can calculate Mostly what we want to find are expectation values. So they can tell us things like, for example, if I wanted to find the expectation value of this. This would tell me the tendency of spins to point along Z in some direction or in a particular direction. So for example, if psi is equal to up, up, I'm going to call this thing, I'm going to sort of shorthand. Of course, I'm going to write this as sigma 0z plus sigma 1z, but what it means is this. So for example, in this state, the expectation value of sigma 0z plus sigma 1z will be equal to 2. You get 1 for the first spin up and 1 for the second spin up. So this state has a tendency to point upwards. That's what that number is telling you. On the other hand, if I take this state, sigma 0z plus sigma 1z would be equal to 0 because one spin points up, another spin points down. So on average, there's no net z spin. Okay, so that's one example. We can also look at something like this. So this measures the tendency of the two spins to point parallel along Z. So in other words, this one would give me a value of 1, but so would that. So it doesn't matter whether the spins are up or down, all this measures is whether they're parallel or not. And then if I had them being opposites, either up, down, or down, up, the value would be -1. So I also want to sort of give you a point of terminology. So if you see something like this, an expectation value that looks like operator O on site A, and then the same operator on site B, this is often referred to as a correlation function. And the reason why is that it tells you the correlation between those two sites. Like whether the two sites tend to do the same thing, then they're correlated, or they tend to do opposite things, in which case they're anti-correlated, or if they do things that are totally unrelated to each other and the behavior is totally independent, then this correlation function would give you 0. So we'll see a bit more about that later on when we get to the full nSight model. So for now, we're going to do 4 expectation values. It's going to be this one, which is like z plus z. And then this one is going to be z tensor z. And then we'll do the same things with x. So the other two expectation values we're going to calculate are sigma 0 x tensor identity 1 plus identity on 0 tensor sigma 1 x. Also, for both this one and the z one, I'm actually going to have us divide it by 2. So instead of getting the total, we're going to get the average. So it's going to be like the average spin in the x direction. And then finally, we're going to look at the correlation function in the x direction. So these are the 4 things we're going to calculate in the ground state. So OK, there's one more word I want to say before we go over to Python. Which is that this H we looked at has 2 parameters, which are this J and little h. But let's suppose I have a matrix M, which has eigenvalues lambda and eigenvectors V. Like so, lambda I and vi, with I being from 1 to n or something. then if I take M and I look at the matrix A times M, which this is some number, then the eigenvalues are going to be A times lambda I, and the eigenvectors are still going to be VI. In other words, if I multiply my operator by some constant, the only effect is it just multiplies all the eigenvalues. As a result, we can say this H really only has one parameter. Which is this little h divided by j. Because all I can do, I can just divide my whole Hamiltonian by this big j. And all I do is I scale all the eigenvalues. It has no other effect. So this way I can only think about one parameter, and that's really important because if you have to numerically solve for every parameter point, varying one parameter is much, much better than two. Okay, so what we're actually going to be looking at is H is equal to minus one times sigma zero z tensor sigma 1z minus g, I'm going to call this a g, times sigma 0x tensor identity 1 plus identity on 0 tensor sigma x on 1. So this is really h over j. And that's the Hamiltonian we're finally going to be looking at in our Python program. So I'll give you a minute to sort of finish copying this down. And to ask any questions you have right now, and then we're going to move into Python in just 1 minute. You should also take this time to pull up that program that I mentioned. So that's the one we're going to be using right now, is called Two-Site Ising. All right, so I'm going to now switch to sharing my this Python rather than my notes. So hopefully you have written this down. Where am I? There you go. Okay, so you should now see my Python program. So here I've just written what I just said, that we're, instead of looking at this two-parameter model, we're going to look at the one-parameter version. And so last time we finished off by finding this matrix. And if I so divide everything by j, then this is the matrix of my h over j Hamiltonian. And this is something which we can put into our Python and say, find the eigenvalues and eigenvectors for me. So that's what we're going to do. First, again, I realize that not everyone has sort of a lot of programming experience. So I want to make sure we're on the same page. So we're going to be using various things in this exercise. And so one thing we need to do is be able to define a function. So I do that like I've shown you here. So I'm defining a function called f. This x is what is the input to the function. And then this is what the function actually does. It takes x and it squares it. And then it returns that value. So if I run that, now I can use the function, so I try like f of 3, then the result is 3 squared or 9. So this is how it works. And so now we're going to have a practical example. So first I import my numerical Python or NumPy package, and now I'm going to create these matrices that we found that I just wrote at the top of the notes for today for the x and zz operators. And then we have this function which is going to combine those matrices with the parameter g to return the overall Hamiltonian. So yeah, as I just wrote, these things, by the way, I think in the morning class, somebody was saying this text was a little bit small. So is this okay for everyone, or should I zoom in more? Okay, cool. I see some positive thumbs up over there. That's good. Thank you. So yeah, if we put this matrix in, so this is like this. Just type it. So this is the one that I wrote before and that we found last time. Okay, and then the ZZ matrix. I'm going to use a command here, which is sort of convenient and which would be useful for you to learn. So what this does is I put in the elements that are on the diagonal of the matrix. And then this np.diag is going to create a 4x4 matrix, which is zeros everywhere except for the diagonal, where it has these values. So that's sort of a quick way of entering it. So now I can run this. And so now I have this function, which I'll put in my parameter g, and it'll give me back the matrix h. Okay, so now we're going to use that. And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to plot the eigenvalues, the eigenenergies of this Hamiltonian as a function of the parameter g. So what I'm doing here, I'm going to create a set of values of g that we're going to at which we're going to evaluate this Hamiltonian and find the eigenvalues. So I use this np.linspace command. So what this does is it creates a set of evenly spaced points. I can choose how many. That's this numpoints variable. And it starts at g equals 0 and goes to g equals 2. And in this case, a total of 21 points. So I'm using intervals of 0.1 in g. And then I'm going, for every value of g, I'm going to be finding the four eigenvalues. And I want to record all of those. I want to store all the results that I get. So I use this np.zeros command. This creates a matrix of all zeros. And this is its shape. So it's 4 by numpoints. So 4 is the number of eigenvalues for every value of g. And numpoints, again, is the number of values of g we're using. So it's going to let us store everything. OK, so now we're going to loop through all the values of g. And for each one, we're going to find the eigenvalues and then fill them into this table that I made. So here I'm using a trick. This enumerate command, what this does is for this matrix g's, it gives me back for every g both the actual value of g here and also where that g was in the list. So like for the first element of the list, it'll give me back the value g, in this case 0. It'll also give me g index equals 0 because it was the first element of the list. So and I'll be using that down here, as you can see. Once we have g, for each element of g in this table, we're going to first use a function we defined to get the Hamiltonian. Then we find the eigenvalues and eigenvectors in this line. And I want to point out one thing here. So we talked about, in the very first class, using np.linalg.eig to find the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of a matrix. Here I've slightly changed this. I added this h at the end. So what this does is this command assumes, if I put the h, it assumes that the matrix is Hermitian. And so the algorithm uses a slightly different and faster algorithm. But if your matrix was not Hermitian, you'd get the wrong answer. So it's important that this is like a speed up, but you have to be careful when you use it. But you know, in our case, Hamiltonian is basically always Hermitian, so that's safe. So this can give me the eigenvalues in E and the eigenvectors in V. In particular, this E is going to be a list of the eigenvalues, and then V is a matrix where the columns are the eigenvectors, and the columns are in the same order as the eigenvalues, so they correspond. Okay, so now we're going to sort the eigenvalues from most negative to most positive with this command, and then we're going to store them in our table. So again, what this notation does, so g index tells me like where in the list of g's the one I'm currently on was. And then this colon means I'm going to use all four rows of the table. So I'm going to store all four eigenvalues at once. So this e was a vector. I'm saying this vector e is going to go into the g index column of my table energies. OK, so now the last thing I'm going to do is actually make a figure. So I import this package here, which is the standard one for making figures in Python. And then what follows after this is some kind of like, you know, magic formula that you memorize from the syntax of this package. But basically we start with this line. This creates a new figure that we're going to use. And then for every row in our table, we're going to plot the energies as a function of G. So this here makes a scatter plot where the x-axis is, on the x-axis, the values are going to be the value of the parameter G. And on the y-axis is the eigenvalue. Okay, so let me run this. Let's see what we get. Right, so I had it print out the values of G that we're using. So it print just in intervals of 0.1 from 0 to 2, like I said. And then here are our eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian as a function of G. So you can see this is the ground state. This is the first excited state, the second excited state, and the highest energy state. Okay, so this is sort of the general idea. And now what we want to do is calculate these four expectation values that I talked about. And this is something which I'm going to have you do as an exercise. So I filled in most of what you need here, except for the actual calculation. So what I'd like you to do is to find matrices for these four operators. That's like the sigma 0z plus sigma 1z over 2, the sigma 0z, sigma 1z, et cetera, and put these matrices in here in the program, in these empty spots. And then there's also empty spots here and here. So this one I'm actually going to fill in for you. I decided that I should just tell you this. So the ground state, to get the ground state, we're going to just take the first column of the matrix of eigenvectors. So in this case, I've done the sorting in a slightly different way here. So I use this argsort command. And what that does, it doesn't actually sort the list, but it tells me what order I should use if I wanted to sort the list. And then I can use that to sort both the eigenvalues and the eigenvectors to make sure they stay paired in the same order. Then once I do that, since I've sorted the eigenvalues to be from most negative to most positive, the first column, or zeroth column, of V is going to be the ground state. So this is how I get the ground state of my system. And now I want you to use these matrices that you wrote up here with the ground state in this sort of style to compute these different values and store them in our table. And then after that, we'll make plots. So to do this exercise, I'm gonna send you off to the breakout rooms to do this, you know, in small groups with your friends. I will, you know, come around and help you and answer questions while you're doing that. So I think this is going to be like a 10-ish minute exercise, maybe up to 15 minutes, depending on how things are going. So let me get those breakout rooms started. Okay, so I hope everyone's back. I guess you all had a chance to practice a little bit with these making matrices and using your different NumPy commands and also doing these tensor products. So for the Z average matrix, what you want to do is take the tensor product of Z, the poly Z matrix with identity, and then the reverse, and then add the two together. The result should have been this. It's the matrix which is diagonal with 1, 0, 0, minus 1 on the diagonal. And then we use the np.diag command to make a matrix that has these things on the diagonal and 0 everywhere else. The next two we already computed earlier in the program when we were making the Hamiltonian. So I just copied those. And then the last one, I've used some more trickery to write this quickly. But if you do the calculation, what you should find is a matrix which has ones on what I would call the anti-diagonal. So it's like ones going from the lower left to the upper right and zeros everywhere else. So I first make a matrix that has ones on the diagonal. This np.ones makes a matrix with all ones that has a length 4. This turns it into a diagonal matrix with ones on the diagonal. And then this swaps the order of the rows. So then it reverses this into the anti-diagonal matrix. But you don't need to use these tricks, but this is just a way of writing it faster. Okay, and then to do the calculation, to get the dagger. So normally we'd want to take both the conjugate and the transpose. In this case, because this GS ground state variable is just a vector and not a matrix. We don't actually need the transpose. We can just take conjugate. If you do include transpose, it should still work. As I will note also, this is something which I think is like a poorly designed aspect of Python. Other languages, I think, are better about this, that when you take a column of a matrix, it remains a matrix. It just, one of the dimensions is one. Whereas in Python, if you take a column of a matrix, it turns it into a vector and kills the other dimension, which I think is a poor choice. But because of that, we don't need transpose. We can just take conjugate. So then we do these calculations. So let me run that. And then you should get figures which look like this. So let me comment first on sort of the easy ones that to talk about, which is first this. This is, again, this sigma z, it's a tendency for the two spins to point parallel to each other in the z direction. So you can see when this g is equal to 0 on the left end, then this is equal to 1. And that's what we already said, that our eigenstates are just like up, up, and down, down, the two ground states. And both of those have this zz equal to 1. Similarly, and then as we increase g, this will decay. Because instead what's happening is that this expectation value of x on site 0 and site 1, the average, is going to go up from 0 towards 1 as I increase this g. Okay, so the two things that are more surprising are, one, this expectation value of z. It's 0 everywhere, apparently, except for at g equals 0, where suddenly it's 1. So that's pretty strange. So in a minute, when I turn my notes back on, we'll talk about why that happens. But I also want, it's strange for two reasons. One, because of this jump, but also because the expectation value of sigma z is definitely not 0, but the expectation value of a single sigma z is 0. And you sort of might expect that the expectation value of like a times b is kind of like the expectation value of a times the expectation value of b, but here that's definitely not true. So that's an interesting thing which we'll also talk about. And then another interesting thing is this xx. Again, it has this weird property that it's both same weird properties, that it's not, it doesn't look like the square of this one. And sort of constant at 1 doesn't change with g. It seems kind of strange. And then also it has this weird jump. So let me then go back to my notes and discuss why all these things happen. Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is this okay, so there's two questions we answered, which is, one is why does it jump, and two is why is it 0? Okay, so I'm going to start with the g equals 0 case. So we already found here that the eigenstates, as I said above, are up, up with energy minus 1, down, down with energy minus 1, up, down with energy 1, and down, up with energy 1. So what you'll see here is that there are two possible ground states. So in general, the ground states can look like A times up, up, plus B times down, down. And these A and B can be anything. So let's calculate the expectation value, this expectation value here, in this state. So I first apply the operator to, all right, so let's write it down. Calculate. So I first apply the operator to psi. So I'll just, as a shorthand, write sigma 0z plus sigma 1z acting on psi, and the result is going to be A times up, up, minus B times down, down from the first term, plus A times up, up, minus B times down, down the second term. Okay, and then now I'm going to take the expectation value. And that is going to give me now 2 times A norm squared minus B norm squared. So you can see now there's a bit of a problem here, which is that the ground state could be anything with any values of A and B, but the result of this expectation value depends on the values of A and B. And what that means is we're basically going to get a random answer at g equals 0. So Python semi-randomly picks A and B when it does the numerical calculation of the eigenvalues and eigenstates. And so what that means is that g equals zero value is kind of meaningless. So like in my case, the value I got was 1. So that just means that, I had to do this divided by 2. So if I divide this by 2, then just kills this 2. So the value I got was 1, which just means that Python, in my case, selected just this state as the first ground state. That's possible for it to select various other things instead. Okay, and then the second question. So if we want to look at if g is not zero, then I think the key fact is that eigenstates generally respect the symmetries of the Hamiltonian. And if I take with all the spins and I flip all the spins, the matrix for H doesn't change. And so what that means is that the eigenstate, or let's say the ground state, has both like spin up and spin down parts, but they're equal. And as a result, since those two parts have opposite expectation values, the result is that the expectation value overall is 0. Okay, so then for comparison, we looked at sigma 0z tensor sigma 1z. And here the result looks something like this, more or less. To see exactly why this happens, previously we said that up and down, since they're sort of equal and sort of symmetric, and one is positive and the other one gives a negative expectation value, then they sort of cancel out. But the cancellation doesn't happen here. Because we actually get a plus one for both cases when both spins are up and when both spins are down. So this sort of gets around the symmetry problem. And we can say that sort of is a better measure overall. Of the tendency of spins to point along the z direction. Okay, so the other thing that I wanted to talk about was this sigma 0x tensor sigma 1x. So this one, what you should have found is that it looked kind of like this. That it's 0 at g equals 0, and it's sort of 1 everywhere else. Again, this g equals 0 point, the reason why that looks different than everything else is the same issue that there's a degenerate eigenvalue, so the ground state that it finds is sort of random. So in this case, it picks this as the ground state, and then if I apply sigma 0x tensor sigma 1x on the state up up, the result is down, down, because x flips the spin. And the inner product of down, down with up, up is equal to 0. However, if I instead, but if ground state is this superposition, then sigma 0x tensor sigma 1x acting on this is equal to down, down, because it flips both spins, plus up, up over root 2. And you can see that these two things are equal. So this point like really should be here if you pick as your ground state this one. And if it's if you pick as your ground state either both up or both down, then you get 0. And if you pick anything else, any other superposition, you'll get a random value between 0 and 1. So any value between 0 and 1 is possible at g equals 0. OK, then for g not equal to 0, there's another surprising thing, which is that this is constant. In general, you don't expect expectation values to be constant. And generally, if they are, it means it's a conserved quantity. So I think you have a whole another class that you're taking on symmetries. So I assume you probably discussed something related to this, but I don't know exactly what you talked about, but I'll just say a few words about it. So sort of the physical picture to have in mind is that this flips both spins. But if I look back at my H, then here, this matrix looked like 1 minus 1 minus 1, 1. And if I flip both the spins, then all it does is it swaps the order of the rows and swaps the order of the columns. And if I do that, then the matrix just goes back to itself, so nothing changes. And of course, sigma x commutes with itself. So this term with sigma x's has to commute with this term with sigma x's. So overall, this term must commute with h. And that means this is a conserved quantity in the system. And that's why its expectation value, in fact, is constant. OK, so this is all I want to say for now about the two-set Ising model. So in the last half hour today, we're going to move on to the more general case of the Ising model with an arbitrary number of sets. OK, so our general Ising model is going to look like this. We're still going to divide by j. So this was the sort of first way we wrote it. Well, not with dividing by j, but now we want to be a little bit more precise. So we should remember what this actually means. So in this case, we have our sites, let's say, site 0, site 1, site 2, dot, 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 site n. So if I look at a term like sigma 0z, sigma 1z, what this actually means is sigma 0z tensor, sigma 1z tensor, identity on site 2, tensor dot, 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 tensor identity on site n, n minus 1, I should say. Similarly, you know, if I have like sigma 2x, what that means is identity on 0, tensor identity on 1, tensor sigma 2x, tensor identity on 3, tensor dot dot dot, tensor identity on n minus 1. So I'm just trying to be very pedantic to make sure that we all understand exactly what this means. Okay, so now a question we want to do is to solve this model. And to do that, we need to first write down the matrix for the Hamiltonian. And then we want to actually solve it and find the ground state and calculate expectation values the same way we just did the two-state model. So let me then write down our steps that we're going to follow. So one, we're going to choose a basis. Two, we're going to find a matrix for H. Three, we're going to find the ground state. And then four, we're going to calculate stuff. In particular, the one that's going to be most interesting to calculate is actually this. And I'll come back probably in the next class to why that is the thing we want to calculate. Which, of course, also involves identity over rows. OK, so the first thing we're going to do is choose a basis. So we have n sites. That means we're going to have 2 to the n basis states. And they're going to look like this. So this is an index 0. This is position. The last one is 2 to the n minus 1. And this one I'm going to define to be the state that's all up. Then if I look at like 0, 1, 0, dot, 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 0, this one I'm going to define to be the one where I flip just the very last bit. And then the next one will be like, so I'll call this basis state. This is going to say I'm going to have this index 0. That is, the 1 is in position 0. This is index 1. So in the same way, index 2 will be like up, up, dot, dot, dot. And we have down, up at the very end. Index 3 will be like up, up, dot, 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 up, down, down. Index 4 is like up, up, dot, 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 down, up, up. And you can see how it goes from there. So one thing that we're going to need to do is to have a function to turn the index into a list of the spins. So I'm going to take a few minutes now to show you how that works. So let's suppose that I am going to have, I'm going to use n equals 3 as an example. So if I label my basis states sort of in order on my state, they look like this. Okay. And what I want you to notice is that this sort of divides in halves. So like in the top half, the first spin is going to be up and the bottom half is down. Then for spin one, it looks like this. And for spin two, it looks like this. I hope this picture is clear what I'm trying to say. Let's now look at how to get each of these things from my index. So if my index, Okay, we're going to look at spin zero first. Okay, if the index is in the first half, then up. Second half, then it's going to be down. So to check this, we can take the index and divide it by 2. We divide it by 2 to the n minus 1. In this case, this is 4. And then throw away the remainder. So if it's in the first half, then the index is less than 2 to the n minus 1. And therefore, the result is 0. If it's in the second half, the result is going to be 1. So if we say that 0 means spin up, and 1 implies spin down, then we can say that the spin is equal to the index divided by 2 to the n minus 1, where this symbol here means divide and throw away remainder. Okay, so how about finding spin one? So here, we can look at instead the index divided and throw away the remainder with n minus 2. So in other words, this is going to divide things into fourths. So the first quarter, we get 0. The second quarter, we get 1. In the third, we get 2. And in the fourth, we get 3. And we want this to correspond to spin up, that to correspond to spin down, that to correspond to spin up, and this correspond to spin down. So there's a way to do that as well. So we want 0 and 2. We want to send both of those to 0. And we want 1 and 3 to both go to 1. And OK, we want this. And we can do this. using mod 2. So mod 2 is going to take everything even and give 0, and take everything odd and give 1. So in Python notation, I would write this as percent 2. So in this case, I can get the value of spin 1 by doing index double division sign of n minus 2 mod 2. And so if this is 0, it'll be mean spin up. And if this is 1, it means spin down. So we can then continue. So like spin 3, for example, will be the index divided by 2 to the n minus 3 mod 2, etc. And so overall, we have a function that, given the index, what we get out is a list of zeros and ones that look like this. The last one is just going to be the index mod 2, because you can see that if we go back to my example here, the index mod 2 is going to be 0 here, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. So it's always 0 for spin up and 1 for spin down. So this is going to be a way, now we can use this to convert between our basis vectors and our actual basis states written in terms of the spins. Okay, so now we can write this in Python as a function. So I'm going to assume we have this function. And I'm going to call it D2B, which means decimal to binary. Because what you can recognize is that actually all I've done is I've taken this index here, which is a number in decimal from 0, from 0 to 2 to the n minus 1. And this is that same number written in binary, where this is the least significant bit and this is the most significant bit. OK, so that's going to be the first step that we need to do. So we know how now how to convert between our basis states and these list of spins. Okay, so we can also do the reverse, of course, which I'll call B to D, that it's binary to decimal. And this is, you just take your list, and let's suppose your list looks like, you know, something like this. This is like spin up, down, down, up. And I take this one, and then I add that to this one times 2 plus this one times 2 squared plus this one times 2 cubed. And then if I add these up, I get, in this case, 6. And so that 6 would be the index for this particular basis state in out of my 16 basis states that have 4 sites. OK, so I think that this can be a little confusing if you haven't seen it before. So if you have any questions, now's a good time to ask. I'll stop for a few seconds. Okay, well, doesn't seem there are any questions right now, so we'll move on to step 2. So in this step, now we're going to find the matrix. And this is really going to be the most difficult and most important part. And there are several different approaches that we can use. And I'm going to show you right now the first one, and if we have time, the second one. So the first method we're going to use is the Kronecker product. So, you know, we did this trick. If I have like, you know, as you've just calculated, for example, sigma zero x tensor identity on one, the Kronecker product tells us that I take my sigma x matrix, which looks like 0, 1, 1, 0, and then I multiply every piece of it by this identity. To get the result, which looks like sort of 1, 1, 1, 1, for example, right? So now with more sites, we can just continue this. So let's do an example. Let's do sigma 0 x tensor sigma 1 z tensor sigma 2 x. So this piece here looks like, well, doing the same steps again. So I have a zero block. I've got my 1, 0, 0, -1 block. I've got a 1, 0, 0, -1 block, and I've got a zero block. So, okay, so writing this out just as a full matrix looks like this.
Excuse me.
Yes, go ahead.
So here, so we always do go from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. It's not associative, right?
Actually, it is associative.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, okay, so just to be clear, so I'm gonna do it from left to right just because it doesn't matter and that's one way you can do it. But yes, it's associative, so I could calculate, like, this is what I am doing is this, this, but I could instead do that. And the results are the same. So yes, that's actually, that's quite nice that this is the case. Okay, so then the whole thing, now we're gonna take this sigma 2x and we're gonna put it into all of these spots. And so you can see that in the end, we get an 8x8 matrix, which has like a big zero block and a big zero block. And then it's going to look like 1, 1, -1, -1, 1, 1, -1, -1. So this is how we can do this repeated Kronecker product. And so this is one way that we can construct our matrix. Let's see like a more real example of like an actual term in the Hamiltonian. So let's look at the term sigma 0 z tensor sigma 1 z tensor identity on 2 tensor dot 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 up to identity on n-1. So the first thing I want to do is make a list. Of all these operators. So that was going to look like sigma zero, well, okay, that's not quite right. So I'm going to make a list which looks like sigma z, identity, dot, 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 identity. So note that in Python, there's actually a way to do this sort of nicely. I can write this as sigma z, comma sigma z, plus identity times n-2. And so this piece will automatically create a list that has identity repeated n-2 times, and the addition is going to concatenate the list. So this makes the full list of terms. Okay, and then the second step is going to be repeated Kronecker product. So for example, we could say like, maybe matrix equals, let's call this list, I'll give it a name, I'll call it, what should I call it? Let's call it ops, short for operators. So in that case, we're going to use, we're going to say that ops of 0 is the starting point, and then for op in ops of 1:, so this notation here means starting at 1, and then the colon means do everything else in the list afterwards as well. So we're taking everything in the operator list after the first element, which we already have. Matrix equals np.cron. So this is this np.cron does the Kronecker product of math. This is what we've accumulated so far with our new operator. And if we do this for every term, so what we want to do is then make a sort of outer for loop that iterates through all of the terms in the Hamiltonian. For each one, creates this list. And then for every list, does this to get the product. And then we're going to add that to some overall matrix that we're constructing by adding each term sequentially. So I think to make this more concrete, I have sent you another Python program, which are uploaded to the Dropbox, rather, which is called, one sec, it's called Ising Insight Exact Diagonalization. So I'm going to pull that up now and share that with you so you can see that I'm doing exactly what I've just said. So let me do that. Okay, so here's this file, Ising Insight Exact Diagonalization. And so the first thing I do is I import my packages that I need. That's NumPy, and then this PyPlot for plotting. I also define the individual matrices. So this is the single site SX, SZ, and identity matrices. So let's do that. I'll show you this np.cron command that we're using. So it just does exactly what we've been talking about. If I do np.cron SZSX, this is the result. I get a 1 times SX, and I get minus 1 times SX. And then this is the program. So I've just told you about this. So this program is going to create the sigma z term of the Hamiltonian. So first thing I do is I make a matrix of all zeros. So the reason why I have to do this is because every term is separate. I'm going to add all those terms to this matrix as we go. So now I have an empty matrix, basically. And now we're going to iterate through all of the sigma z terms in the sum. So that's here. So these, for I in range n minus 1, this is going to set I equal to every value from 0 to n from 0 to n minus 2, because they're overall n minus 1 sigma z terms, one fewer than the number of sites, because sort of we can't sort of fall off the edge after the last site. Like there's no sigma z n minus 1 sigma z n term. That's not there. And then for each of these terms, I make a list of operators. So using this notation that I just told you. So first, I make a list of identity operators. And the number of them depends on which site I'm on. So if I is equal to 0, then there aren't any of them here. If I is equal to 1, there's 1. And then after I do that, I get my two SC operators. And then I add the rest of the identity operators until I get to the end. So I have my full list of N operators here, which has two SZs at position I. Okay, then I do exactly what I said. So I start with this first operator in the list, whatever that is. And then I iterate through the list, starting from the element 1, each time doing this np.cron. And at the end, I add that term to my overall matrix ZZ. So that's that was started as a matrix of all zeros. And then with every term, it gets more stuff added to it. Okay, so let's define this function, and now I'm going to try using it to show you what the matrix looks like for different sizes. So let's check for n equals 2, and you should recognize this is the same matrix that we got before, which we did by hand. For n equals 3, it looks like this. For n equals 4, it looks like this. And you can see there's a good reason why we're doing this by the computer and not by hand, because this is not something you want to do by hand, clearly. Okay, so of course it continues to be a diagonal matrix, and you can see these diagonal elements. And so that's all we can say. So okay, it seems to be working. And in fact, we'll be able to test it later on by doing two different approaches to finding this ZZ matrix and checking that they all give the same result. Okay, one other comment I want to make. You may notice that I have something here. It's called dtype equals int. So that's not strictly necessary. But by default, if I create this matrix just without that, then everything here will be like 0.0, 0.0, 0.0, 1.0, 1.0, minus 1.0. And given that all that you can know ahead of time that all the entries in the matrix will be integers, this will make it like a little bit faster for your program to run. Okay, so this is all the Python I want to show you for right now. We're going to come back to this quite a bit in the next class and finish going through this notebook. But I'm going to go back to my notes for the last few minutes of the class. Okay, so we've seen that this works. And so to finish up today's class, I'm just going to sort of give you a preview of what we're going to be doing next time. So we'll see method 2, which is what I call the column by column approach. So in this case, we're really going to use that function that we had previously. We're going to take our index of basis state, and we're going to turn it into some set of spins. Then we're going to apply the term to get a set of pairs of spin list comma coefficient. And then we're going to put this back into the vector representation. And that's going to be equal to a column of our final matrix. And then there's also going to be a third method, in which we will use the fact that this term is diagonal. And that'll make that'll be the fastest way to generate the matrix. So next time we're going to go over these two methods. And I will again give an example of how to do that using the ZZ term of the Ising model. And then I'm going to have all of you use the same methods to find the third method will not apply, but the first two methods to find the matrices for the X term for arbitrary number of sites. And then we're going to use that to solve the model, find the ground states, and calculate expectation values like we did with the two-site model. So that's what's on tap for class on Wednesday. So with that, I'll call it the end of the class. I will stick around for a few minutes to answer questions, but otherwise that's it for today. And